but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I'm a limbo.
It'll be Oregon and USC coming up on Saturday, Autzen Stadium, 12:30 kickoff. That's Elijah Scott with the cover there of Tracy Chapman's Fast Car. Joe Lohrig, special teams coach, University of Oregon. From a standpoint of fans and media, some games are bigger than others. For players, some games are bigger than others. As a coach, how do you sort of manage that? How do you manage, hey, you want to be locked in and you want to be have a lot of energy, but you don't want to overdo it? Joe Lohrig joining us. From campus, from his office at the University of Oregon. I'll just jump right in. I mean, you're in your office. Set the scene for us. For people who will never go to Joe Lohrig's office, what is the scene there?
Well, right now I'm looking outside at the construction of the Mo 2.0, our new indoor facility, which is going to be the nicest indoor facility in the country. It's going up fast, looking great. I see people out there working hard. But if you look inside, you're going to see a lot of pictures of my family and my favorite places. And most of that, if not all of that, includes fly fishing pictures. So pictures of my wife and I and my kids. We spend our lives in Montana, have for years. And so that's what you're going to see here. Not a lot of football stuff. We kind of live that, and it is what it is. But yeah, you look around, you see three beautiful kids, a beautiful wife, and a bunch of pictures of Montana.
Don't you think you need like a nice river that runs just outside the office so you can just fly fish between meetings or fly fish, you know, on a whim?
Wouldn't that be amazing if you had like the Willamette and the McKenzie just flowing right in your backyard? Wouldn't that just be incredible? It's like a guy could go do that this afternoon if he wanted to, even, huh?
Do you have like? Do you keep your stuff? Is your gear like in the office, in the car? What do you? How close is it?
Yeah. It's. I have a truck that I use just for fishing, and it's in the back of that. So yeah, I can jump in and go. I typically do go every Thursday. I'm taking my wife on a lunch date today, so I'm not going today. But typically, I go every Thursday. Coach Lanning sets the schedule for Thursdays about 2 o'clock, and we get out of here. And certainly before daylight savings kind of kills me, but before daylight savings, I usually head out to the McKenzie or the Willamette and just get a couple hours. And I find if you get away a little bit, it makes you a lot better for at least me. If I can get away from football and kind of clear my mind, I come back and I'm usually a lot more productive and a lot better.
Okay. You're a wildlife guy. So I got to share this story with you. The time change and the darkness, you know, I leave the studio, I'm driving home, I'm driving down a 2-lane road. All of a sudden out of nowhere, flash, there's a deer who's running in front of me. I clip the deer. My car hits the deer. I feel terrible. I pull over. It is a good sized deer that is laying in the road, and I feel awful. It's still alive, but it's kind of laying down its head. And you know, I pull over. Another guy in a truck pulls over, and I'm feeling terrible, and I'm sitting there. I'm just ready to call like the non-emergency number, and the deer lifts its head up and then rises to its feet, and it runs off.
I love it, man.
Me feel better about this. Did that deer make it, like, you know, for... Like,
Oh, yeah. He made it. He was in shock. You know, he got hit. He was in a little bit of shock, got up and took off, and he's out there living a good life right now, man.
Thank you. Thanks for making me feel better about it.
Absolutely. That's
terrible.
The best way to think about it.
I went home, and I just... My middle daughter was like, "What's wrong, Dad?" And I was like, "I hit a deer," and she was like... it's going to be okay. The deer's going to be okay. But I got to be honest with you. I drove that road the next morning and looking around, I was looking everywhere for that deer. Give me a brush with wildlife. Because when you're out there and you're fly fishing, you must look up and see some amazing things.
Yeah, you see lots of amazing things. I'll tell you what, the one I wish I had the picture with me right now. I'm looking at my frame here that, like, you know, goes through like the digital pictures there. But I've been doing for 15 years straight. I went to Alaska. Me and a couple other coaches would go up to Alaska and go to a fly-in lodge. And there's literally pictures of me fishing with grizzly bears within 10 yards of you. Man. Me just walking right by you. It's just absolutely crazy. You know, the Katmai, the falls where you see the bears hunting the fish all the time, the famous pictures that you see all the time, fishing right there, like right where they're at. They won't mess with people, especially at that time of year, because there's so much salmon in the river.
Yeah.
They don't want to get injured. So any kind of, like, there's never been a bear attack in Katmai National Park, even though it's the largest congregation of bears at that time of year eating salmon. There's never been one attack on people just because they're so focused on the fish that are in the river. So
what is that like?
I've had lots of eagles and all kinds of cool stuff. That's a big part of it. A lot of people think that fishing is for fishing. For me, the fishing is really secondary. What it does is it carves out family time. It carves out time where you're not on your phone, where you're not listening to music, where it's just you outside. You know, I have a little drift boat, get into a boat, and just spend some quality time unplugging from the world, which is more and more, at least in my world, it's more and more difficult to do.
Especially during the season. I mean, I find myself at this point of the season going, I could use, you know, I could be 20 yards from a grizzly bear and feel good about that. What is that like when you see?
No doubt.
What is that like when you see a bear catching a salmon? Because you're watching, like, you know, that's true wildlife. That's not going to a zoo.
No, it's amazing as you what you would think it is. It's just like after a while, like anything, you kind of get used to it, but it's like you're in awe. I mean, just that it, again, I like grew up seeing the pictures of that and watching it, and it's just I don't know, something I don't take for granted. It's really cool, and I try to be really appreciative of all those kind of things, especially being a Northwest guy and living in Oregon. You know, that's the kind of stuff, obviously I'm saying Alaska for the bears, but just the outdoor stuff. Like if you live here and don't embrace that, you're sure missing out, because there's a lot of really cool stuff around here for that.
Joe Lorig is our guest, assistant coach, University of Oregon. This is a big game. Media, fans, I'm sure players and coaches all go, okay, this is a big game with big implications. How do you keep your guys from maybe trying to do too much, trying to play with too much emotion? How do you sort of measure the the tempo and keep guys focused, but you want them playing with a lot of alacrity and enthusiasm, but you just don't want it to overcome them so they can't function?
Yeah, you know, I think it really goes into not what you do this week, but what you've done all the previous weeks. You know, it's what your approach is every single week of having, and I know people think it's kind of coach speak, but it's really not, of having that 1-0 mentality. And, you know, if you beat USC, you don't get two wins in the win column, right? If you lose, you don't get two losses in the loss column. It's no different than the last opponent that you play or the next opponent that you play. And I really, you know, Coach Lanning really preaches that to us and really believe that in our core. You know, I know I certainly do. And I can tell you right now, we just walked off the practice field and Dante Moore, our quarterback, got up and spoke to the team. And that's exactly what he said. He said, you know, you can... He said, I've done it before in games where I made the moment bigger than it really was, and it affected me and caused me not to play as well as I can. This is just the same nameless, faceless opponent. We're going to play Oregon versus Oregon, and we want to walk out of here 1-0. And you know what? Regardless of what happens after that, we're going to line up the next week, and we're going to be saying the same thing. And I think if you have that consistent mentality from the head coach down to the assistants and down to the players, it filters down, and that's how they process, and that's how they act.
You guys have had some big special teams moments this season, with some fake punts and some kickoff things that have gone right for you. As a coach, when you know that that is a possibility, if the kicker or the kicking team sees the right look that, you know, the call is on, what is that like to watch it unfold?
Oh, that's awesome, man. You know, we execute those things over and over and over. And so when you actually see them come to fruition on the field, you know, I'm proud of the players. It's always about the players. I'm proud of their execution. You know, Coach Lanning, I'm lucky to work for a head coach that puts a lot of time and energy and allows us to play the best players on special teams. And you know, we really believe here that there's such fine margins. You know, when you're playing USC or Penn State or whoever you're playing, there's such fine margins in the game that everybody's going to focus on offense and everybody's going to focus on defense, obviously. But a lot of people don't put the time and energy and resources necessary into their special teams. It's kind of a lost part of the game. And if you really pay attention, which, you know, I'm a special teams coordinator, of course I do, but if people really pay attention, it has a really, really big impact on every game. You know, one of the things that we do is we track what we call hidden yards in a game. And I think people would be shocked and amazed at how often, you know, we win a game and we had 80 more hidden yards or 100 more hidden yards. I'll give you an example. So say we punt the ball, right? And they get no return yards on their punt return, okay? And then say the next series, they punt the ball and we get 11 yards on a return. Well, there's 11 yards that were just kind of hidden where we gained on them and without boring the fans out there with all the different numbers. You can think about, okay, kickoff, if we gain five there, and then, you know, it adds up. We're over a game. Oftentimes it's 80, 90, 100 yards that are hidden yardage where we've won that, right? And so think if you could add 80 to 100 yards to your offensive stats or subtract 80 to 100 from your defensive stats, which essentially that's what it is. It goes to one or the other, right? It just doesn't really show up in the stat sheet necessarily unless you track it. It has a major, major, major impact. And Coach Lanning recognizing that, I know our players have bought in and recognized that, and it definitely impacts it's going to impact the game one way or another. Either it's going to change the game in the right way or the wrong way for your team.
You mentioned, you know, you've got coach lets you have the best guys, you know, help us with that. Like, are there teams out there that you think, you know, they want to hold their best guys off because they're worried about injury or overuse, or what's the concern?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got to be aligned with the head coach's beliefs and values. And you know, here it was very clear when I took the job, and I'd already worked with Coach Lanning, so I already knew. But it was very clear that every player other than O-line, D-line, and quarterbacks could start on two special teams. And so if a receiver's there, he can start on punt and kickoff return, or, you know, out of the big four, I'm talking punt, kickoff return, kickoff cover, and punt return. I can have anybody on the team start on two of those units. If it's going to be any more than two, then I go to Coach Lanning and we talk about it and make sure. We also every week, on Sunday when we meet as a staff, I put up a chart of how many each player by position played in that game, how many special team snaps, and how much they played on the season. So with that being said, you know, we're not going to overutilize or underutilize players, but we're going to track it and make sure that it correlates with what they're playing on offense and defense as well. But yeah, there's people out there that won't play their best players on special teams. But you know what? If you're like me and you know who those people are, oftentimes when you watch it, they're not successful over time.
Joe Lorig.
They're just not.
Joe Lorig is with us, a special teams coach at University of Oregon. I was a punt returner for my community college team, but we went punt block on every single punt return. I was back there alone. They told me, hey, if you need to fair catch it. Otherwise, catch it and get what you can. You know, what are you looking for in a punt returner? What kind of mentality do you want from a guy back there?
Now, does that say something about your skills or about the coaching?
Because
if I don't have a very good returner, then I just go block every time. But if I have a really good returner, then I just call return every time. So I don't know. You might have to think about that.
I think they trusted me to catch the ball is what they said. We were saying, like,
there you go.
We know you're okay back there, but we, you know, if you get 11 yards, we're happy with it. So I think that was the mentality.
Now, what junior college did you go to? I went to a junior college.
De Anza in California.
Okay.
Yeah,
absolutely. Northern California. Yeah, I wish more junior college balls out here.
I know. And so, yeah, the Bay Area community colleges, like from San Francisco State to De Anza to West Valley and, you know, Diablo Valley, Foothill, there were some guys that went on and played, you know, at a high level. You know, you went to Western Oregon. That's where you eventually ended up. But, you know, why do you think the community colleges up here aren't as robust?
Yeah, so I went to Walla Walla Community College to start with, and then I transferred to Western Oregon. And really, community college football, I mean, I could tell you story after story after story of it saving guys' lives, mine included, literally. I was a lost young man and didn't have good grades. And lots of guys like me went to Walla Walla and were really saved and given another opportunity, to, you know, and eventually got ourselves right, got our grades right, and were able to go to a four-year school. But, you know, I don't know. I think it's seems like funding is a big issue with things. You know, I'm not at that level to know what goes into those decisions. But then, you know, when somebody drops, it's easier for the next people to drop. And then when they drop, then there's it's harder to schedule and those kind of things. So I'm a huge, huge proponent of small college, community college, just because not everybody's going to play at Oregon. As a matter of fact, very few people are going to get that opportunity to play at a school like an Oregon or any big school like that. And so, you know, I was able to go to the Western Oregon Central Washington game last week, and I can tell you the purity of the game at that level, kids playing because they just love each other and love the game and their parents were there. It's just really cool. And it really provides guys an opportunity where high school football doesn't have to be the end of something that a lot of guys love. And it really helps a lot of guys stay focused and stay on track as they work through college.
I love that. I also, I think, you know, maybe you need that. It's good for the soul to see people in it just for the love of the game, or maybe it have, you know, not a big TV contract attached to a game. All that stuff's great. But, you know, I think about that when I see the Big Sky and other conferences. I go, hey, there's still a place out here for kids that are just playing because they love to play, or D2, D3, NAIA, it's all those levels. What do you love about coaching? I can tell you care about kids. And I think in our last talk, it really came through. But, you know, what do you love in your day to day?
Yeah, so it's really simple for me. You know, I never got into coaching for money or anything. I could have never even fathomed working at Oregon. People at Oregon were like heroes to me. There's no way I could ever even have dreamt about being here. I coached for one simple reason. I grew up with no dad, and my college coach, I think I said this last time, but my college coach ended up being the best man at my wedding. He's like my dad. He gets mad when I say like a dad. He likes me to say big brother because he doesn't want to seem that old. But he was like my dad. He taught me how to tie a tie. He taught me. I watched by the way he treated his wife, how to be a good husband. I watched by the way he raised his kids, how to be a good dad. Because I didn't have that. I had a wonderful mom, but I didn't have a father figure growing up that way. And so the impact that my coach had on me, I said, I want to have that impact on other people. You know, and so that's solely the reason that I got into it. Never thought I would be a Division I coach. My goal was to be a professor and a coach at Western Oregon. That was my entire goal in coaching. So, I was hoping if I could have just that impact that I had, that my coach had on me, on one kid, how amazing it would be. And I can tell you, I got a message this week from a player who played in the NFL just this week, literally, and from this state, and told me, hey, coach, just want to let you know, you changed my life. I love you. You had the impact you wanted to have. And so when you get things like that, you know, it makes it all worth it.
That's such a win. Such a win. All right. What do you see from USC on film when you look at them from a special teams perspective?
Yeah, you know, just what you'd think you'd see. I mean, they're super talented. So, you know, really good returners, really good kick returner. Their punt returner is also the receiver. Lemon, he's really, really good, number six. So explosive, dynamic athletes all over the place. You gotta make sure that you're containing, you know, those explosive players. And you know, kind of tricky. I think probably everybody saw out there, they put their punter in the same number as the quarterback a couple weeks ago, Heward. And so he came in and had a really big kind of a pivotal play in their game against Northwestern. So a little bit of trickery there, but certainly creative, you know, which is, I would think, probably a staple of what Lincoln Riley does. And so we got our hands full, man, but our guys are up for the challenge. They're really excited about the opportunity, and looks like it's going to be nice weather here. I know Autzen will be loud, and it's going to be senior night here, so I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, is that poor form to do the jersey thing, or is all fair in love and special teams?
Honestly, I didn't really know the rule on it. So I didn't even know that it was illegal, to be honest, but we do always check it just because, I don't know, just for years and years, I always have who the punter is and who the backup punter is on my sheet. I'm not saying it couldn't happen to me, but, it's something we've been aware of. I think, again, anything that falls in the rules is legal to me, but it sounds like it would have been a penalty on the next punt is my understanding of it. If the guy had gone in and punted, but hey man, trying to get every edge you can get, and it didn't get called. So I get it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny is like when I once saw a team that, you know, they're running a player off and he stops and he kind of hides by the sideline. And to this day, every time a player's running off the field, I'm watching from the press box, and I watch till they cross the line and go off the field. I mean, I've just been conditioned to make sure that guy gets off the field. Let me tell you,
I'm the same way, John. But you know that, and that is illegal. That's been deemed. But you know that happened to Oklahoma a few weeks ago. Yeah, and they I can't remember who they were playing, but they somebody scored on them because of that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they come out and tell you on Monday, well, we missed that, but because that's very clearly a rule. But I'm like you, because back in the day, we all did that.
Yes.
Yeah, you'd run the guy out. So the coach would act like you're yelling to get a guy off, and he'd run outside the numbers. We all did that one. Absolutely.
I'm watching that stuff, and then I'm always counting players. But you have to, as you know, now you got to look at USC. You got to look at the guy. Is it the right? Is that the punter? Is that the quarterback? You know, people in disguise. Joe Lorig is with us. All right. I appreciate you coming on. Obviously, you know, a lot of people in the state of Oregon connected to you because of your time here being, you know, homegrown, so to speak. And rooting for you. I want to ask you before I cut you loose, like, you know, this is a business. It can be cutthroat. James Franklin, a guy that you coached with at Idaho State, you know, you see him at Penn State. You probably maybe talked to him before or after the game. Who knows? And then, you know, he's back. He's, you know, he's got another shot at Virginia Tech. You know, what do you make of this business in general? And do you stay in touch with guys that you have coached with in the past?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. James and I were texting yesterday. Yeah. He's a very close friend of mine. We didn't just work together. We were roommates at Idaho State. It was his first full-time job. My first full-time job. We moved, got us this little junky little apartment together and lived together for a year. And yeah, I absolutely talked to him last year, you know, before the Big Ten championship and this year before the game. And, you know, I think the business, it's a tough business, but it's what we all sign up for. We kind of all know what it is. I'm really excited for him to have the opportunity that he has because he's an amazing coach and an amazing person. You know, I always say, like, how would I evaluate? I know all the stuff that happens behind the scenes, and I can tell you this. I would be very proud and happy to let my son play for James Franklin. Mm. No question. He is one of the good guys that does things the right way, treats kids the right way, treats people the right way, has a really good heart. And I think he's going to absolutely kill it at Virginia Tech. I really do. I think he's hungrier than he's ever been. You know, and sometimes being knocked down, it's just like anybody in life. When you get knocked down, it's not what happens to you. It's how you respond to it. Right. And I think that just made him more hungry and more excited. And I'm really excited to watch what he does. But as far as the industry, we all kind of know what we're signing up for, man. I never feel, just to be honest with you, sorry to be so long.
No, you're good.
I never feel that bad for the head coach because, you know, he had a $50 million buyout.
Right.
It's all the people behind the scenes that no one thinks about. It's, you know, even the assistant coaches, people think, well, they make this money. Well, you know, a lot of assistant coaches' contracts are tied to the head coach. So as soon as he's not the head coach anymore, you don't actually have a contract. Yeah. That's very common in our business. The recruiting people, the trainers, the equipment people, those people's jobs could all be in jeopardy, and they don't have $50 million to fall back on. So I never feel bad for the head coach, even though, you know, obviously they didn't succeed or it's perceived they didn't succeed. But it's all the other people and families that are affected that I feel bad for. But again, we all knew when we got into this business, we all knew what we were signing up for. And if you don't win enough, that's what happens. And that's why we keep working and doing everything we can to win, man. We work as hard as we possibly can to make sure we're putting a good product on the field and make our fans proud.
Yeah, you had Bruce Barnum on that Idaho State staff. And
Barney's a good friend. I listen to Barney's interviews with you every week.
Oh, my gosh.
You do a great job.
He's had a tough year.
Just, you know, he's exactly like he is on the radio. And, like, that's how if you walk in. If you went to dinner with him, that's exactly how he'd talk. Bruce is Bruce, and I love that about him.
I love it. All right, go enjoy your day, and I'll catch you down the road. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, I listen to you every day, John. Think you do a great job, and appreciate what you do for the Northwest, man.
Thanks, Joe. Take care, man.
All right, bye. See ya.
There's Joe Lorig, special teams coach, assistant coach, University of Oregon, man of the world. What a really good interview. I hope you love that. Share it with a friend, a family member, and... you know, it's interesting to get to know these guys as people. We've had a chance to do that with the interviews on this show over the years. I feel like you know Joe Lorig now, and every time you see a punt or a kickoff, and maybe you pay a little closer attention. I want you to leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network.